Hello, and welcome to Life Beyond the Numbers, the podcast for people who are curious about how to have a more fulfilling work life. We live in a world largely driven by numbers, logic, and reason. But how we feel at work and about our work impacts us, our organizations, and society. There is a relationship between the numbers of our organizations and the life beyond the numbers. I'm Susan Mikhrylon, your host. I've lived and worked in many countries. I've met people who love what they do and people who don't, people who bring their full selves to work and people who won't. But one thing that I've learned that is common to us all is that we are all unique and have unique experiences. And it's helpful to know that there are others who think like we do, or have had struggles too, or have gone where we want to go, or can show us things we didn't know. So join me and my guests as we place a lens on the human side of work life by sharing insights, stories, and strategies to inspire you to let your uniqueness shine. So today I am delighted to welcome Rob Lawrence to Life Beyond the Numbers. Rob, you're so welcome.
Oh, I'm so excited to be here, Susan.
That's great. And the thing that struck me the most reading about you, Rob, well, one of them, because there was quite a few and we'll come to them hopefully during this conversation, was what you say about the power of sound to broadcast messages worth listening to and hear the meaning and message beyond their words. Now, I'm usually talking about beyond the numbers, so this time it's about beyond their words. And you're talking about business leaders and high achieving professionals and entrepreneurs. But what does that mean?
Wow, it's lovely to hear that, Susan. I think that the short answer to that question, what immediately comes up for me, is truth. You know, what's your truth? And one of the things that fascinates me is if you, particularly with kids, I find, is they know if you're telling the truth or not. And I think as adults, we kind of know as well, but that intuition might be somewhat buried, but that doesn't mean we shouldn't avoid the subject of doing our best to not only talk about and tell our truth, but understand it ourselves. And I think that's the super important thing.
I listened to an episode of your podcast, which was about this very topic, telling the truth or being honest. And that reminds me of that, because do we set out not to tell the truth? Are we trying to hide the truth? Why do we need to find our truth?
Yeah, I think I can speak to that from my own sort of personal experience. It would perhaps be harder for me to speak about that for others, because I wouldn't say I'm an expert specifically in that area, i.e. truth-telling. My instinct is that it's not that we can't or we don't tell our truth. I think that just as we grow and we evolve, and who knows, this might be as much to do with Western society and culture than anything, because I don't have another experience of a different culture on a different part of the planet. But I sense, because I work with this stuff every day, that our truth is there, but it's often buried. And I think it's we take a number of knocks and bruises in our life. We try to fit in. We try to please people. We try to make money, whatever it is that we're trying to do. Lots of trying in there. So we adjust our truth. And I think, like any trajectory, lots of small changes over a long period of time can end up putting you on quite a different heading. You can end up in a completely different place. So I think that from my own personal perspective, talking about my own truth here and my relationship to sound, as you mentioned earlier, and audio and voice and all that good stuff, I was unhappiest when I realized I was most unaligned to my truth. And I wouldn't say I'm always there. I think that it's a constant realignment, like the plane traveling from London to Paris. it knows exactly where it's going, but it's constant 98% of the time, it's constant realignment. And I think we're all doing that to a greater or lesser extent. But then I think also there's many of us, and this was true for me too, walking the planet, going about our way, knowing that we were heading towards something, not sure what that was, but just being unaware that we weren't living our truth and who we were. And now that I have that awareness, I can't imagine how to navigate that journey without that awareness. So I guess that some of what I do is helping people to become aware that they might just not be speaking or living their truth.
And I want to get on to the piece you said about you being out of alignment with your truth a bit later, but I'd like to talk about the power of sound first, because I mean, we hear a lot, I guess, about the power of voice or even the power of sight, but the power of sound goes further down the pecking order, I think.
Yeah. Oh, it definitely does. Yeah. I think it's less glittery and fancy, perhaps. Not for me, curiously. That's the thing. And I realized that my experience of sound, whilst I'm sure there's hundreds of thousands, if not millions of perhaps musicians or audiophiles out there that would agree with me. I agree with you. I often feel like the minority in terms of my relationship to sound, particularly in this day and age of online visual media and social media and all the rest of it. Although I think podcasts have got their place and are doing a lot for sound, if you like. But I think to your point there, it's often an overlooked sense. We perhaps take it for granted. I found out very recently that actually it's the first sense we develop in the womb. So we begin to hear before we do anything else. And it's the last sense that we lose, apparently. So I thought that was insightful. But yeah, I think for me, whatever it is, for whatever reason, just the way I'm wired, or maybe there was some early experience with sound, some I remember, but there might be some unconscious, unknown to me experiences I may have had that gave me a profound grounding, I suppose, with sound. But yeah, it moves me in ways that no other sense does. I mean, don't get me wrong, I love my sight and I love touch. I very much enjoy those senses a lot. But there's something about sound which really, really gets to my core. Whether that is listening to someone speak or laugh, or whether it is listening to an album or a music or a piece of soundtrack, or even just a more abstract noise, actually. I really enjoy that stuff as well. Yeah, I could be out walking and it can stop me and I'm just listening to that tractor in the distance or something like that, because the sensation it creates for me is just such an interesting thing. And I guess for me, There's an uncanny connection between what we were just talking about and this. And that is that there is no sensory input for me that feels more real than sound. So I can see things and I can touch things, but the thing that really feels like truth to me, feels like the real thing, if you like, is an audio experience.
So rather than seeing is believing, it's hearing.
Yeah.
Or right. Listening or hearing. Hearing, I guess, is believing.
Yeah. I mean, for me, I know that. I'm confident with that for my experience. And I appreciate everybody's experience is different. But for my experience, I'm confident with that because occasionally I will hear something, whether it's a part in a song or whether it's a word that somebody might say in a coaching session or something like that. And I'm like, there it is. That's the truth. There's nothing that feels more real than what I've just experienced there. It's a knowing. And I can't say that I always or have many experiences like that through other senses. So it's curiously through that medium that feel like there's a real soul connection, if you want to call it that, or a real, for me, again, sort of speaking from my own personal experience, you know, a sense of a connection to the divine or some kind of divine quality. And I'm like, that's it. There it is. It's like, there's nothing that could be more true than that. So that's what comes. And I think the rest of the time I'm sort of going about my life in excited anticipation of hearing another truth and having no idea where it comes from.
That's what I was just thinking about there. When you're talking to people, when you're coaching or meeting anyone or this conversation even, do you know from the sound of the other person's voice or from their tone of voice or whatever it is, whether they're in their truth or not? Or is it that you recognize when something just, I don't know, reverberates to some deeper level?
Yeah, I think I follow you. I think for me, it's the signature is different every time. I guess that's my response. And that's the fun and exciting part of it for me. I'm like, wow, there it is again, but it feels and looks so different, but you know, it's the truth. And yeah, I mean, there are people, they tend to be few and far between, but definitely there are people that I can sit and listen to. And I just have a longer sense, a more sustained sense of this person's in their truth. You just know. For everyone else, it's just moments usually. And then for others, I'm like, this sounds fabricated. This sounds like you're saying that because that's what you think you should be saying. There is a truth in there, but it's buried. So let's explore that. If I'm in conversation with them, the rest of the time, I'll probably just move on, you know?
Yeah. And are we all capable of that, do you think, Rob? I mean, obviously you can't answer for everybody, but you know what I mean? Do you think that we all have that compass almost in us?
Yeah, well, I think there's sort of various levels to it. Again, I'm not an expert in this specifically, but my sense is that, yes, we are all capable of it, but we might run out of time before we get there. And I think that's the urgency about why would we want to do this work with someone else or with ourselves to find our truth. But I can't think of a more compelling life experience than to discover that, or at least be on the journey to discover that. I think we're all born with it, quite frankly, but I think that we quickly lose it just trying to fit in, if I can broadly term it that way. But then the work is to try and work out, well, how can I live my truth but still fit in? And I think that's the challenge. And yeah, for some, they don't care about fitting in. They don't feel they need to live their truth. But curiously, I think that they do end up fitting in because people respect them for living their truth. So it's an interesting thing. But yeah, absolutely. I do believe we're all capable of it. I think in many respects, that's perhaps when it comes to life purpose and why are we here? That's perhaps some of it. Or if it's not to discover our own truth, it's to discover the truth, whatever that might be. And I think that might be a more universal quality in terms of our relationship to life and everything else.
And this makes me think about listening as well, Rob, because I guess they go hand in hand, and I'm not sure how much we listen to what's being said. There's a lot of listening to respond or to get your own point across, whatever. But if we're not tuned into really listening, it may be harder for us to discern the difference between somebody's truth or whether we want to believe them or not.
Yeah. Even then, when you're asking me or sort of prompting me for the next part of our conversation, I can witness my own mind not listening. Right. So I was listening to the key parts of what you were saying, but at the same time, I was invested in what shall I say next to kind of zoom out from that. And perhaps to the point you're making there, Susan, is that most of the time we're not listening, really listening. I mean, really is listening. We're actually just thinking, what do I want to say next? Or what shall I say next? And just listening for the odd word or phrase that we need to hear in order to meaningfully respond in a way that satisfies us. But I think there are really good listeners out there. And it's funny, some of my social media, we're rarely on social media, but some of my social media tags are Rob is listening. And people remark that I'm a good listener. And I'd agree, I'm an improving listener. I become a better listener. It's actually an aspirational phrase. The reason I chose that is because I didn't feel I was really that good at listening way back when. And I wanted to make a sort of determined commitment to be a better listener. And I'm still working on that, quite frankly, because I think we do. We have lots of voices going on in our heads. We've got our own agendas, and we want to say whatever it is that we want to say, because we believe that's the right thing perhaps to do, or that's the thing we need to do. But I think there's a lot to be said about presence and offering somebody your undivided attention and a true listening experience, because it's an amazing thing. So if I can set myself up in the right way when I'm working with somebody and truly listen to them, where I can actually just park the voices in my head and truly just give myself to that person and be with them, it's actually a really magical experience. Not only just to listen, but I think for the other person, because I also know what it feels like to be truly heard. And I think that's what we're getting at here. There's hearing, and then there's listening, and there's being understood, and there's being felt, and just feeling that presence of somebody else as well. So I think that's the magic of a listening experience.
And in the workplaces, I think one of the biggest gripes that people have often is that they don't feel anyone listened to them, or they don't feel like their voice is being heard. And I actually wonder if that just goes the whole way through the organization, that it's not just the people lower down that are complaining about the people higher up, but it's almost like it's society, and that we really don't know very well how to listen.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I mean, I don't know where it comes from, and I don't know how it may have changed over time. I think there is a perception, there is a narrative these days that it's got worse and our attention spans have got shorter, which I would probably agree with. I think that the more distracted we are, the less likely we are able to cultivate that space to offer somebody our true presence. So there's probably some truth in that narrative that suggests we're less good at it. But I think that it is a skill to some degree that we have to work on and evolve. And yeah, we're all on a journey, I think, with that, because I think we all can offer somebody else a different listening experience, whatever that might be. I think the way that we hear somebody else can't be unrelated to our own experience of listening to that thing, if you see what I mean. It's like the tree falling over in the forest, you know, is there a sound? And then I think there's another element to that. If there is a sound, if there were two people there, do they experience the same sound? And I'm curious about that. I don't know what the answer is to that. My guess would be they experience the sound differently based on their own life experience. And I think because of that, the opportunity is almost infinite for anybody to have a listening experience with somebody else, if that makes sense. So depending on the combination of who's involved in part of that. Yeah.
So for somebody listening to this conversation and wondering, perhaps, do I listen? Am I hearing what I'm meant to be hearing? Or how might I listen better? What's something for you to check or reflect on how your listening skill is, or where your listening skill is?
Yeah, that's a really good one, Susan. I think that my immediate response to that is, the thing I challenge myself with today is, can I listen without responding? So can I just listen and then not feel the urge to butt in or offer some kind of advice, solution or response, or even acknowledgement? I find that really hard sometimes, just to be able to listen and just go, yeah, I hear you. That can be really challenging without bringing our own experience into it. But I'm careful, like, not saying those words just to acknowledge that somebody's said something, but actually to just really hear them. Yeah, just almost contemplate what it is that they're saying, and just, yeah, be present with the words that they're saying, and that's it. Just try and tune into the bits of your body that resonate with what's being said, and be in that place versus being in a thinking place or an intellectual place, which is kind of all logic and formulaic and analytical and judgy, you know. So yeah, I think that can be a challenging, it can be a fun challenge actually, but it can be a challenging thing to develop. And I've been working on this for years, and I still feel like a complete beginner with that ability to just purely properly listen and be 100% present. And I'm not sure if it is actually possible, but I think that the attempt is a worthy one, because I think the intention to at least try and have that experience creates a certain magic, which I think is lost in everyday conversation and life generally.
I agree. Yeah. Even for myself, I remember having to sit on my hands to try and listen better, because it just felt like that was way of kind of controlling my body from like reacting and so on. But it really is a skill. And I guess if you're not interested in what's being said, it's even harder to listen.
Yeah, it is. And I think that, in fact, that's a great observation, because it's one I've had recently and I've challenged myself on that. I'm like, how can I be more present and more interested in someone who clearly wants to talk or needs someone to listen, when I naturally find myself interested elsewhere or diverting myself or distracted with something else? Equally, I think it's also interesting, like, being aware of our own judgments too, because I think that we're very quick to see or hear somebody and go, oh, they're not my kind of person, or I'm not interested in them. We've immediately pigeonholed them. And that, for me now, I treat that as a trigger to pay more attention, because I kind of play little tricks with myself with this stuff. One is that, firstly, what are they reflecting back to me? So the moment I if I pick up on some strong judgment, I'm like, there's something in this that's being reflected back to me about me that could be useful. The interesting thing about that little hack is you're immediately interested again, because now there's something in it for me. Okay, this person I wasn't interested in, now they're going to teach me something about myself, and I'm really interested in that. So there's that. The other thing is that, and again, I think to where you were going with the commentary there, this idea of, like, perhaps someone wants to talk about something, but it's just really uninteresting to you. I think being with that discomfort of uninteresting and then looking for the interesting thing in the uninteresting dialogue can be a really useful and fun game to play. I mean, people talk a lot about meditation and mindfulness. That's a mindfulness exercise right there. If you can be with that, that's the thing that will develop your muscle in terms of presence, and whatever it is you're looking to achieve through meditation and mindfulness, I think you will find that if you can listen to somebody that is uninteresting to you and be with that and keep interested and keep looking for the thing that is interesting, because there's usually some gold in there. And I don't mean that necessarily for yourself, but for the other person. I mean, genuinely. And again, I see this with kids, not just my own kids, but other kids as well. The ones that are often making a lot of fuss and a lot of noise and keep badgering you and talking, is because nobody's giving them the presence and attention that they deserve. And it's true with adults too. I'm sure of it. If someone's truly heard, then they're heard and then they move on. And I think to give somebody that gift is a wonderful thing. So to be interested when we're not interested is an interesting exercise to play around with.
Like that. So, Rob, let's go back to your work life before. Mm. And you talked about, well, sound being something that you were interested in from very early on. So is that the career you then pursued?
No, not at all. I think I wanted to. Looking back, my options were not as clear to me as perhaps I would have liked them to be at a younger age. I like to think I was ahead of my time. weirdly, I think there perhaps is some truth in that to some degree. And what I mean by that is what I do for a living now wasn't possible back then. The technology didn't exist. The desire, the audience, the market, none of those things existed. I just feel very lucky that I'm at a point in my life that all of those things do exist, and a number of those things converge, and I'm able to make my own small niche in the middle of all of that for me, which is incredibly satisfying. But yeah, I mean, I was interested in a load of other things, which, you know, music, I was interested in technology at the time and still am, computing, but people as well. And I think as I look back, one of the things that I've always had, ever since I can remember, a sense of is just human potential. I would look at friends or other people and just realize they weren't living out their potential, myself included. But just, I could always imagine, I could always see people I knew or even people I didn't know so well, I could just see a much bigger version of them. I could just imagine how that person could be and where that person could be. So it might be a grander version of what something they already did if they were good at sports at school, for example, or music. Or it might be something completely different. I might spot a strength in somebody that was inherent in what they were doing, but wasn't necessarily about the activity, but about the quality of what it was that they, but I could see that on a much bigger scale. And I think that maybe this ties in, I hadn't made this link before, to what we were talking about earlier about the truth. So maybe I could see that truth in people that they may or may not have been able to see themselves. And to some degree, this is true for me as well. I could see a somewhat stifled ambition, and particularly as I went up through my teens and then early 20s. So yeah, in terms of my own journey, though, I think there was definitely an interest in people, an interest in technology, and definitely an interest in sound. And yeah, I explored all of those different avenues. And I ended up starting off with a career in technology, hot off the back of sixth form and school. I skipped university and started earning quite good money in the world of technology, and did that for 10, 15 years. I actually did really enjoy that time there. The older I get and the more I look back on it, the fonder of that experience I am. And still got some great friends that I worked with at the time, still in touch with those people. And it was a really good experience, but it was a challenging one because on the one hand, I was really enjoying it. But on the other hand, I didn't feel like I was living my truth, coming back to that subject. And that was a real challenge. And that was really puzzling for me. I was like, I don't understand this. I'm earning good money. I enjoy the work I do. I like the people I work with. It's given me a good life. But why do I find myself so unhappy at times? And I think that is to do with what we were talking about earlier, this alignment and finding your truth.
And what changed?
Well, I don't think there was a moment. I mean, there were moments. There's a number of different moments, which when I look back on, where I'm like, ah, there were big clues that something wasn't right. The change has been a long and slow one, and is still in motion, I would say. I think there's an element of unburying. So, and to the point earlier, our truth gets buried. So I think the first thing to do was to start pulling off the rocks and start looking for it again. So I'll give you a very quick story. I remember this must have been sort of the very late 90s or early 2000s, around about then. And I remember just stood in the middle of a high street one morning. I can't even remember what day of the week it was. And just feeling very out of sorts, just feeling sort of almost despair, really. And phoning my doctor, because I didn't know what else to do, actually. I just said, I don't feel right. And he very quickly said, you better come in. So I just went straight there. I'm not even sure why I was in the middle of a high street in the middle of a morning on a work day. I can't remember if I was on my way to a meeting or doing some kind of errand or something. But anyway, that's where I was. And I remember going to the doctor, and he listened. He heard me out, but did what I sense a lot of doctors still do to this day. And he's basically like, he used an interesting analogy with me because I worked in technology. He said, it sounds like, you know, computers have processes, they can process a lot, and sometimes they end up running at 100%. And it sounds like your computer's crashed. So his remedy was to prescribe me with these antidepressants. And I just remember getting back in my car and sitting in the driver's seat, having picked these up from the pharmacy, and just being in tears, just crying. But it was a breakthrough moment for me, that utter despair. I think the interesting thing is, looking back on it now, is that I was feeling despair before I went into the doctors. And then when I came out the doctors, I felt an even deeper level of despair. And the breakthrough was, I just knew this wasn't the path. This isn't the solution. I don't believe these tablets are going to solve what I'm experiencing now. So there was a sort of renewed motivation, which didn't happen overnight, but it happened pretty swiftly after that, because I think I'd gone down that path and I thought, no, something's got to change here. So from that point onwards, I started making changes. And actually, looking back on it, I was living a pretty unhealthy lifestyle. And I started making changes in terms of my fitness and my health, and even greater than that, who I was hanging out with at the time, because I realized that actually, and then I started to just pursue things that I, dreams, if you like, that I really had kind of let go of for one reason or another. And I think that's perhaps how I'd ended up in that level of despair, because there were these things I wanted to do, but I wasn't either giving myself the permission or creating the circumstances that I needed to make it happen. And I don't know if I knew this at the time, but looking back on it, the thing that stands out for me is that I was responsible for that. And I think I somehow lost my own sense of self-agency, where I had actually, it wasn't out of circumstances. All of this was in my control and I was there by choice, even though that wasn't apparent to me at the time. But I know that now, and that's the great thing, that most of us are where we are by choice.
We are, even if we don't think we have a choice.
Yeah.
And I think that's often the way, is we don't see choices. We don't believe we have a choice here, or we choose the lesser of two evils or whatever. I mean, even when you talk about the prescription, you had a choice to take the prescription or not to take it. You did have a choice, but a lot of people might decide, well, the doctor's prescribed it, therefore I must take it, and not see that they have a choice. And I think personal responsibility is something, as kids, we were told to take responsibility for our actions, but that was usually when we got into trouble for something. And I don't really know that we learned the value of personal responsibility in directing our own lives.
Yeah. I think to some degree, that's partly down to role modeling and or lack of role models in our lives, people who are actually doing that themselves. And it's interesting you say that, Susan, because as you say that, and the point there about with the antidepressants, the choice to take them or not, I know and have met a lot of people that felt they had no choice. They had to take those. And I think, well, why did you not choose to? You know, and I think actually it's easy not to blame them, because their role models would have taught them that you should do as the doctor tells you. Or, for example, I'm kind of making that up a little bit, but it's the same. We do trust people in places of authority like that. If that's all we know, well, then we think that's the truth. I think this is where it gets interesting for me, is because, is it the truth? Is that the truth? Or is that just what everybody else does? Or is that what you've been told to do? And particularly if you've been told to do that thing by somebody you trust, which may be a parent or a close ally or someone like that, then it's difficult to discern and know what the truth is for you. And I think that's the key difference there for me. But yeah, I think we need to be role modeling this ability to make confident personal choices, the choice that's right for us. So it's more about the choice process than it is the actual choice itself. And are we collectively working together to support each other, to help each other live our own truths and make the right choices for us individually? Or are we kind of like nudging people to make choices because that benefits us, or we think that's the solution, or we think that will make things easier?
And I think this ties back to sound again.
Okay.
Interestingly enough, yeah. Because we're not listening for that voice inside of ourselves, the one that really knows, perhaps. We're listening to the surrounding noise and drowning out. And it's not always noise. And I mean, some people have to take that's not, the choice is you need to take it, then you need to take it.
Yeah.
But sometimes we ignore our own inner wisdom, I guess, or inner guidance, because we're not listening for it. We're not even ignoring it. I think we're not listening for it.
Yeah.
And it's easier to listen to someone else.
Yeah. And again, I wonder if that's something that needs to be role modeled. I think that people need to outwardly express how they reach that decision. And I think teaching ourselves to listen to ourselves and to communicate that, to talk about that, as we're doing right now, is an example of you can do that too. I don't believe this stuff is being taught in school. So I don't think there's anyone in there role modeling, listening to your inner voice. So how would you know? I think there are many kids out there that don't trust their inner voice because they think there's something wrong with them, that they've got an inner voice. Yet it's something everybody has. And more than that, it's not only something we all have, it's something that can be trusted. So there's sort of multiple layers to this. If you're a kid that thinks there's something wrong with me because I've got an inner voice, the last thing you're going to do is trust it. But I think if we can encourage people to not only listen for it, to your point there, Susan, but to trust it. And we only get to trust it through experimentation, like you do in any relationship, I suppose. It's sort of trusting it lightly at first and then getting clear on when we're listening to the right voice in our head, I suppose, and then knowing which ones to listen to and which ones to ignore.
One of my previous guests, I remember, said, it's the ones you ignore, the ones that you hear on repeat. They're always saying the same thing. They're never coming with any new information to the game. It's like, you shouldn't do this or you shouldn't do that or do this, do that. And then the other one, there almost isn't the sound to it.
Right, I agree.
It's beyond the words, like you said earlier, or beyond their words. It's beyond your words. It's more of a resonance or a deep knowing that this course of action or this choice is the right one.
Yeah, I think my own experience of that, what you're saying rings very true. And I'm curious actually to whether this is true for other people and that's their experience of it as well. I wonder if the voices that you shouldn't trust are the ones that keep reoccurring. And I think there is a truth in that, a bit like what I was saying earlier about the person who wants to be heard. They get louder. They go and sort of try and, you know,
on repeat.
Yeah, they're on repeat trying to be heard by more and more people. And actually, I think the trick there is really to sort of acknowledge it, respect it, and hear it. Just say, what is it you want to tell me? And give it the few minutes that it needs to be heard. And then the chances are it will be heard and move on. And then I would hope that would be true. But the other point you made there, the beyond the words, I agree with you, because I think that unquestionably, in my own experience, the key moments of inspiration that I've received, and perhaps I can't remember now, but the time I was sitting in the rain crying in the car with these pills in my pocket, my guess would be that I had in that moment an experience I've had infrequently, but at key points in my life, which is this very faint voice, which only speaks once, I often find. And it tells you, and you know exactly what to do. And that isn't something I can confidently say, that moment of inspiration, as I would call it, it doesn't repeat over and over. It's in the moment. It's there. And if you're lucky enough, you'll hear the whisper of it, but so deeply that you feel moved to take action and inspired action off the back of it. And that's definitely been true for, I think, key moments in my life. It's been a very faint thing. And that if I haven't listened to it and taken action on it, then I've probably missed the opportunity, I think, there and then.
Exactly. It's tuning in, isn't it? It's like when the radio is the static on the radio. You haven't tuned into the channel exactly, and then it comes through loud and clear when you do. But Rob, we're nearly out of time. But before we finish, I just wanted to say, well, ask you about your podcast, because you're almost like a dinosaur in the podcasting world, I think.
Like it.
Yeah.
I'm sure I'm not. Yeah.
But Inspirational Creatives started like back in 2014 or something.
Yeah, it did. Yeah.
Yeah. So maybe you just tell us a little bit about it.
Sure. I dabble with it from time to time still to this day. Podcasting, unsurprisingly, has changed a lot in 10 years. And it was a very different landscape back then. I think it was much more needed back then than it is now. There's so many podcasts that in some shape or form speak to what I was intending inspirational creatives to be. And the original intention was really just to share inspiring conversations with people that I met on a journey to learn more, really, to learn more about creativity at the time, more about entrepreneurship, something I was exploring. I think at the time, certainly my wife, she was trying out new ideas and new things, and she had questions I didn't have answers for. I was curious about entrepreneurship and where this world of living our truth and creativity and making a living doing what you love, that was the underlying theme. I was really keen to meet people that were living that out and ask others and tap into their expertise with anything to do with business, marketing, mindset, creativity, you name it. So I was very lucky and am still very lucky to record and speak to, you know, artists, producers, filmmakers, very successful business leaders or leaders in organizations, coaches, consultants, you name it. And yeah, it was a wonderful experience those first 3 years. Covered a lot of ground in a very short period of time, made some amazing connections, which indirectly have led to what it is I do now. And I miss spending the time on it that I used to, but I felt a little bit like I was in a workshop at the bottom of the garden on my own doing that stuff, except for the recording and meeting somebody new and getting to ask them lots of questions. And even then, that felt, does still to this day, feel very much like being on stage, if you see what I mean. So you're kind of dealing with all of those emotions as well. But I think what it is that I enjoy about collaborating with others today to achieve the same success is that, A, that collaboration. I think I really love creativity in a collaborative environment, whereas Inspirational Creatives is very much a solo kind of venture. Although I've got lots of ideas about how I will maintain it and evolve it, but I think perhaps no surprise it will involve collaboration. I don't think it's just going to be limited to me. It won't be limited to me going forward. So yeah, I think it has been a wonderful experience to learn everything I learned through those early days and leverage that, evolve that, and now share that with others and support them to have not only a similar, but let's hope a much better experience of podcasting than I had. I mean, I loved it, but like I say, the podcasting landscape, the podcasting world has changed a lot, particularly in the last 2 or 3 years. And it's a fun experience being of support to others to help them navigate that.
And I know that because I worked with you, Rob, for some time on my own podcast and my own truth, I guess. And it was a great experience. And if you want an experience of truly being listened to, then Rob is going to truly listen. So, Rob, how might somebody connect with you if they'd like to know more?
Yeah, the easiest way to find me, you can find me on LinkedIn occasionally. Rob is listening, as mentioned earlier. But my website, www.roblawrence, that's LAWRENCE.co. So it's not .com or .co.uk, just .co. Head there and you can drop me an email, book a call, have a quick chat, whatever takes your fancy.
Fantastic. And I will put all those details in the show notes as well as a link to the podcast, Rob. So thank you so much for that conversation about listening and sound and so much more.
Yeah, it's been a real pleasure. It's lovely to do this with you, Susan. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you've enjoyed the paths we traversed on today's episode. If something rang true for you, be sure to let me know. Or maybe you can share this with someone in your life who would benefit from listening too. And if you enjoy helping others, I'd be so grateful if you would leave a review, so that people who might also be curious about their own life beyond the numbers can discover this podcast too.